Welcome to the Pair Program from Hatchpad, the podcast that gives you a front row seat to candid conversations with tech leaders from the startup world. I'm your host, Tim Winkler, the creator of Hatchpad.
And I'm your other host, Mike Ruin.
Join us each episode as we bring together two guests to dissect topics at the intersection of technology, startups, and career growth. So, hey, everyone, welcome back to the Pair Program. I'm Tim Winkler, Mike Gruen joining me per usual. Mike, I messaged you about this earlier, but I read this stat regarding like the new Grand Theft Auto game that's coming out next year. And the trailer just came out yesterday and it received, you know, millions and millions of views. But it created this chain reaction to where a Tom Petty song, Love is a Long Road, spiked by the number was 36,000% in streams. I just think that's fascinating how just like one little thing leads down to that next big spike when something goes a bit viral. I've done this before with HBO's series The Last of Us. They played this Linda Ronstadt song called Long, Long Time. And I was obsessed and just had it on repeat. So I looked up that. That was actually another top performer. That was 4,900%. And then Stranger Things was another one that had something like that spike. Is there anything that caused you to, like from a series, a movie, or a game that caused you to like just start streaming an audio track?
So what's funny is I can remember the audio, but I can't remember like what caused it. I can't remember what show or movie or whatever it was that I caught. But there was something that like brought Dolly Parton back into my playlist a little bit, and just a phenomenal performer. I'm not a big country fan. It's like low on my list of like genres I listen to. So I don't know what caused that.
Dolly Parton's trending right now as well.
That's funny.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
That's funny because that was
she's back.
She's back. That was a couple of years ago, even. But yeah, I think it's like if I see a modern show that's set back like whether it's Stranger Things or something like that, will sort of bring some stuff back into my like rotation. There was something that happened, I think, relatively recently that brought REM back into my playlists and stuff like that. And that's stuff that like I listen to mostly because my sister listened to it. So.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it's usually older songs that they bring back to be current and they spike. So Linda Ronstadt, obviously,
right?
Classic older artist. But all right, cool, good talk. All right, so let's talk about today's episode. I'm excited to share this one with our listeners. So particularly, you know, those that might be curious about, you know, how commercial startups can serve areas that are high priority within the government. And again, this is a theme that we've been building on here across the Hatchpad community, this concept of commercial innovation within, you know, regulated industries like defense and national security. Today, we're going to break down an actual use case of how this is being done. We've got some excellent guests joining us. We've got John Kondo, the CEO of Heavy AI, an analytics and location intelligence platform. They serve both commercial and public sector customers. And we have Rebecca Gavalt, managing partner of Decode Capital, a company that helps tech companies enter the federal market. John, Rebecca, thank you both for spending some time with us here on the Pair Program.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Same.
Cool.
I don't want to date myself with the songs you were naming, but some of those are not necessarily old songs for me. So.
All right, fair. Yeah, I mean, hey, everybody loves a little Tom Petty, Linda Ronstadt, and timeless artist. Before we dive in, we're going to kick things off with our favorite segment, Pair Me Up. Here's where we kind of go around the room. Mike, you kick us off. Lead us with your pairing for the day.
Yeah, so I gave it some thought. One of the things, as anyone who listens regularly probably knows, one of my sons plays baseball. I get involved in some of the coaching. And one of the things that a number of his coaches have brought up with regard to baseball is how important it is when you make a mistake to have a short memory. And I've always thought that was interesting, right? Like, you made a mistake, whatever, like you got to put it behind you. Baseball is like a game of like small things, like don't like focus in, don't get beat yourself up because, you know, you struck out or you missed a defensive play or whatever it is. And why I bring it up is because I think, like, when I think about careers and being professional, like, you know, when you make a mistake, you want to make sure you learn from it. But I think it's also important to not beat yourself up about it, to have a short memory, to be like, you know what, I'm going to take that one, put it behind me. Let's focus. Let's look ahead, and so on and so forth. So I thought that was like a good life lesson at like a little kid baseball level. That's just, it's an important part of life. And make mistakes, put it behind you, have a little bit of a short memory, take what you can from it, move on. So that's my, that's my pairing.
It's solid. Yeah, I think it's so important to get the those lessons in for kids at early ages, you know, especially through sports. It's a great channel to do so. I mean, we deal with startups all day. We talk to startups all day. I mean, let's call it what it is. You know, it's like a 90% failure rate. I was reading a really interesting article about this where it's just not, it's not talked about much of like the fail, you know, the failure stories. And some of them were really, you know, just, I don't know, they kind of hit to a core when they kind of show, you know, show a little bit of vulnerability of like, hey, this is our failure story. This is what happened. Could have sold at 25 million. Instead, we went bankrupt.
Right. We doubled down and
right. Yeah. You know, and it, sometimes it's all timing, but right. Anyways, failure, you know, and, you know, not, not letting that hit you so hard, but rather learning from it, I think is such a great lesson. Cool. I dig that. Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to really go lighthearted here with a food pairing. I haven't done a food pairing in a while, so I'm going to hit it. I'm going to hit y'all with the ketchup and horseradish. So obviously just a brilliant combination of sweet, tangy, spicy. It's one of my favorite condiments, cocktail sauce. And so obviously like going into the swing of the holidays, you know, everybody's going to, you know, spike their shrimp consumption here real soon. I'm sure it's some parties. But if you don't have like a really good cocktail sauce on the table, that shrimp's just not gonna hit like it should hit. So I'm giving a big shout out to the staple condiment for any seafood restaurant or like home kitchen. Cocktail sauce can't be prepared without ketchup. And you know, I like a hot horseradish, like a little really spicy one. Gives it a good burn. So that's what I'm gonna go with. Ketchup and horseradish sauce. So that's the food pairing. Pass it over to Rebecca. What quick intro and your pairing for the day.
Or feel free to trash Tim's if that's what you want to do.
Oh, that's not very nice, Mike.
It's just disgusting. Yeah, that was really absolutely disgusting. There's a lot of judgment.
I could eat it by the spoonful. I'm being real. I love it so much.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know this before I agreed to come on.
Hey, this is a no judgment zone, Rebecca.
It's an indicator of questionable decision making.
Maybe I failed, but I'll learn from it. You know?
Well, it's great to be here. So I am one of three managing partners of Decode Capital, which is a venture capital firm, and very excited to be here. And so my pairing, when you emailed me to tell me to be prepared for this, I looked around and said, well, what am I doing right now? So I was sitting in front of the fireplace working later at night, and I had a mezcal old fashioned. Mm. And if you haven't had a mezcal old fashioned, highly recommend, best type of old fashioned and a fireplace, and ideally not doing work. That was the bad part of the pairing, but the rest of it was good.
Nice.
That's great.
I do like a fireplace.
Mezcal, I haven't had an old fashioned. I definitely do a mezcal marg, but the old fashioned.
It's really good. Yeah. It's more wintry.
Yeah. You know? A little smoky. Mm-hmm. Throw a little cocktail sauce on the rim.
No.
You should not do that.
Any specific type of mezcal that you're drawn to, or is it just any?
There's Illegal is pretty good. The Añejo. And then, there's the one that's the four rabbits, but rabbits is in Spanish and I can't come up with the word for rabbits right now. And I don't want to embarrass myself when this gets put out, but
we'll plug it in the show notes. We'll Google it. I'm taking notes because I love a good recommendation on a bottle of booze. Awesome. Well, yeah. Thanks again for joining us and we'll pass it to John. John, quick intro and your pairing.
Well, thanks. And, happy to be here. I'm John Kondo. CEO of Heavy.ai, been on board for about 2.5 years. And it's funny, Rebecca, your pairing, because when I started to think about it too, you know, outside of, you know, but a very typical pairing would be a bourbon and a cigar, but that's, you know, I thought I could be a little bit more deep than that. And so then it was like, well, okay, a bourbon and email, because every now and then I am working late and doing email, and there's nothing like winding down with email and a glass of bourbon. But I think really, you know, what I came up with was a good bottle of red wine and cooking. And it doesn't matter what I'm cooking, but just having that. And I think the important part of that is really it's not so much the pairing of the flavors and things along those lines. It's kind of the mood that it puts you in. And so, you know, I have a pretty busy life during the week and on the weekends and such, both with work and with family and things along those lines. But cooking is my getaway, right? It is, it's my time. It's my thing. And if I've got a good glass of wine going with it, try to do all the chopping before I do that. But, you know, doing that. So it's a good pairing. That's my kind of, I think, favorite pairing. But, you know, Rebecca, next time we're sending emails late at night, I'll think of you drinking a mezcal old fashioned. You can think of me sitting here with a bourbon.
Just sitting there, make it stop.
strong alcohol showing on this round, guys. That's a kudos to everyone. John, what is the what's the last meal that you cooked? What were you cooking?
Jeez, what is the last meal I cook? We've been, you know, I barbecue a lot. Just this week, what did I make? And then this week I did a just because it was during the week meal, so had to do it pretty quick. But salmon. You know, made some homemade Mongolian barbecue sauce, marinated that, seared on both sides, then put in the oven for a little bit and stuff. That came out really well.
So no cocktail sauce.
No cocktail sauce. Yeah, the cocktail sauce.
Save it for the shrimp.
I do love cocktail sauce and I love really fresh, good horseradish. But I'm not sure about the ketchup and horseradish.
Yeah, ketchup and horseradish. But we can move on.
I mean, that's how cocktails made, but
I know it is, but you know,
it's, can't have one without the other.
Yeah, it's just when you say ketchup, it just, you know,
that actually used to be a punishment. When we were kids, we would, you know, you lose, you have to eat a spoonful of ketchup as a punishment. Just ill, it's torturous. All right, moving on. let's get to the heart of the discussion here. So, this is how I kind of envision the conversation flowing. I'd like to have like each of you just kind of give a brief breakdown of your companies. John, I'll actually start with you just to hear a little bit more about the product you're building at Heavy.ai, the mission, you know, some of the types of customers that your technology is serving. Then we'll pass it over to you, Rebecca, to shed some light on how, you know, Decode Capital operates. And then from there, I'll just have you just go straight into how Heavy.ai was introduced, you know, went going through the Decodes program. And then we can kind of riff from there. So John, why don't you begin and just, you know, hear a little bit more about, you know, what you guys are doing over there at Heavy.ai.
Sure. Happy to. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think is always an interesting story is how we were founded. And I like to start there and then I'll talk a little bit about what we're doing currently and stuff. But Todd Mostak, who's our founder, and now our CTO, Todd, was one of those brilliant minds in the world that was writing his dissertation at Harvard on the influence of social media on the Arab Spring. So not necessarily a traditional place to start a database company, but we went and harvested, this is about 10 years ago, went and harvested, you know, hundreds of millions of tweets that were, and most of them were geolocated, trying to do analysis on those. And as he loaded it up, found that everything he loaded that much data into just came to a screeching halt and thought, you know, so in his spare time thought, hey, maybe I can write a program to do this. Spent some time, had a little bit of background, started doing this, started hanging out at the MIT computer lab. They said, people started to see it. And they said, geez, if you can do it with this, you know, what can you do? And his notion then was, you know, which today looks very obvious, but back then was to use GPUs. And if you think back 10 years ago, GPUs were really thinking of just really for gaming, right? And not for analytics or certainly not for AI and what it is today. So, you know, fast forward, what we've developed is a GPU accelerated platform that helps people do in primarily geospatial types of analysis, but it's where there is, you know, there's a few critical things that come to mind, right? You have to have a moment, you know, you have to be able to make a decision within a time period. So many of our applications are, we need to make a decision. We have an impending deadline, whatever that is. There's, you know, some investment that needs to be made or a decision, you know, a mission critical decision that needs to be made. And we have to do as much analysis as we can, but that decision can't be put off, right? And so to be able to take as much data, different types of data, often it's geospatial data, satellite, LIDAR, things along those lines, bring that together and be able to get quick answers. Doing that quickly has allowed us to be really successful in some of the big, heavy industries. So you think about telecommunications when you're looking at, you know, call records and such, and there's billions of those, and looking at where you have network issues and stuff, we're thinking about where to put your next tower to improve service. You've got things in the federal government that are looking at a lot of geointelligence and stuff in the intelligence community and such, seeing some, you know, great use cases in the energy space, oil and gas and renewables and such. So there's, you know, where there's big data sets, lots of different types of data and decisions that have a window in which they need to be made. You know, we do really well there.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, it certainly seems like a lot of use cases popping up with the innovations happening in space tech, right? You know,
yeah, there's absolutely
a lot more satellites being shot out into orbit, and you know, the amount of data that's being aggregated as a result of that. Certainly,
as you know, there's all kinds of stats, but it just shows that, you know, we always talked about forever Moore's law, right? The doubling of compute power. Now you look at it, and your data is quadrupling almost every month, right? Mm-hmm. The amount of data being collected, you know, if you think about the amount of video streaming that is collected, or just all the types of data, you know, not getting into all the privacy issues and all those things, but just satellites, right? You look at the stats are incredible of the number of satellites that are being launched. And then your ability to intake that, ingest it, analyze it, make decisions, you know, and that's where we do really well, is we help you do that really fast.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that, because like I was at a talk a while ago. It was an ISP, essentially the provider to our to part of the campus, whatever, talking about like the large amount of data that they're pushing through their networks and how they needed data science and scientists to actually start looking at the network track. Like, they're like, the things that you guys are doing, you guys are all, these are huge scientific projects. It's billions of records traveling over our network. If you got, you know, the data generates data type of concept of like, now we just need you guys to also apply some of that same stuff to some of the network stuff that we're doing, just to figure out how we can optimize. And there's just so much, and it is funny, the Moore's law aspect of it as well, where data just keeps generating more data, which generates other data, and so on and so forth. So cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a growing problem, right?
Exactly. So. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to expand more on how, you know, Decode and Heavy.ai has kind of led more down this pathway for national security and defense customers. So before we talk about that, so Rebecca, yeah, let's hear a little bit more about, you know, what's going on at Decode Capital, and then you can kind of just segue that right into, you know, how you got introduced with Heavy.ai.
Yeah, sure. Happy to. So Decode Capital, our tagline is that we're the VC firm that knows federal. So that is the space that we play in. And we invest in what's called dual use companies. So companies that have large plays in the private sector that want to either launch or expand into the Fed market. So our thesis there is, you know, the U.S. government should really stop paying some of the large primes to rebuild what already exists in the private sector. Just fix your acquisition processes and how you're engaging, and take advantage of the tech that's better and already out there, you know, particularly in the very innovative startup space that the U.S. has. So that's where we invest. We invest at the growth stage, I should say. So we're at the late A to C range. And then we actually launched the fund from an advisory firm that we've been running for about 7 years. And that's how we worked with Heavy. So the advisory firm, it's you can think about it as a dual facing marketplace. So on one side of the firm, we work directly with the federal government. So we have contracts with DOD primarily, though we are government wide, and we're providing them training and advisory services on how to find and contract with innovative companies like Heavy. So we've trained now about 1600 people across the DOD. And a lot of times people would think, well, why is an outside company training the government on their own acquisition processes? But it's pretty complex stuff. And that's what I don't specialize in it, but the team does. And so we help the government, you know, figure themselves out to be able to engage with companies like Heavy. And then on the other side of the business, we work directly with tech companies. So we've worked with about 160 over the years. And what we're doing is sort of teaching the fundamentals of the federal market, and making sure that companies, once they decide they want to go into federal, well, first we help them decide if they even want to do it, because it's painful. And then once they decide that they want to do it, what we try to do is equip them with the knowledge and know-how they need to actually stay in the market, be successful, and hit revenue faster than if they were just sort of doing it on their own. The founder story from the advisory firm, I just think is cool, and it's super fast. My partner serial entrepreneur herself, always in the gov contracting space, and she wrote an email to all the big VC firms in Silicon Valley and said, I can help your portfolio companies figure out the federal market. Are you interested? And she got like a 40 or 60, I forget which one it is, percent hit rate. And she launched the company from there because there was such, everybody knows that the Fed market is big, it's sticky, there's a lot of money there, but it's also pretty opaque and pretty hard. And so that's how we were founded. So we found Heavy back in 2018. So we've been working together for a while. So back in 2018, the way the Decode program worked back in the day, it's different now, but back in the day, what we did is we took applications for classes. We ran classes 4 times a year around specific tech areas. And then each class was about 2 months long. And during those, you know, classes, there were 2 in-person weeks in DC, but otherwise it was, you know, virtual learning and us providing a lot of, you know, instruction on all the different aspects of the market, marketing, pricing, use case mapping, all the different contract vehicles, things like that. So Heavy had applied to the program. And then my partner, Megan, actually went out to California to get a demo of the tool. I'm sort of blown away at what they were able to do. But also, you know, our perspective is always, okay, this technology is really cool. We can see the private sector use cases, but can the government use it? And it was huge to be able to see the sheer amount of data that they were able to manipulate. And inside the government, it's actually illegal for them to erase data. So it is a growing and continually growing problem for them to be able to analyze the data sets that they are constantly ingesting. So it was a very clear fit between what Heavy was doing in the private sector and what they could do in the government. So it was a pretty easy decision on our part that we wanted them in the program. So then there were some personnel changes that happened in the interim. And so eventually when they joined the program, they had a really phenomenal Fed salesperson who we loved working with. And we just really started the relationship from there. And then I personally had worked with Heavy separately. I had worked with InQtel for a bit. And InQtel is the venture capital arm of the intelligence community. And so I had been working with them and had seen the amazing things that Heavy could do, again, working within the IC. And so it was a pretty easy decision for us to see the value. And then it was, you know, Heavy clearly saw the value of getting into the Fed market. So it was pretty much a great match.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it's, I'm curious on your background. What were you doing before Decode Capital?
Yeah, sure. So I was in the government, actually. So I was at the CIA for about 13 years. Within the CIA, I primarily worked in counterterrorism. So I was working on Taliban, Al-Qaeda issues in Afghanistan, Pakistan, did that for several years, went out to Afghanistan a few times. And then I worked a bit with the Israeli Mossad on some other terrorist groups they were most interested in. And really the way that I describe it to people is that I was the end user of what is theoretically the best tech in government, right? So this is post 9/11. A lot of the government budgets were going toward the counterterrorism mission. And the use cases there are really finding a needle in a haystack. So you're inundated with information gathered from across the intelligence community agencies, whether it be NSA, NGA. So NSA does cell phones, NGA does geospatial overhead. So you're gathering all this kind of data and you have to find the bad people in that data. And so the tools that we were able to then, the tools that we had were honestly not that great. And so then when I left, I did that for about 10 years and then decided to go over and work with InQtel because what they were doing was going out to find the best technologies. And I wasn't alone at CIA with having these problems, right? Across the intelligence community, people are struggling to manipulate data sets and manage significant data overload and try to derive insights from it. And so working with InQtel for those 2.5 years was fascinating, to be able to see all the tools that were out there in the private sector that were doing similar things and the parallel use cases, whether the use case is in the financial sector or the telecommunications sector. It was a similar use case. It was just different data sets. And so working with InQtel and seeing what Heavy could do was sort of mind-blowing. And then when I ultimately joined Decode, Heavy had joined Decode as well. So for me personally, I had been able to work with Heavy when they were with InQtel and then also when they were with Decode. So able to see, to work with them both places, and has been super rewarding.
Yeah. Really neat how that's all kind of, how that all kind of came about and are connected through some past lives there. But so I am curious, like, you know, when we first connected, you kind of pointed out, like, we're not like an accelerator. We're not like a Y Combinator or something here. And just kind of like pulling on that thread a little bit, because I want to just kind of expand a little bit more on, you know, how Decode Capital and your consulting arm or advisory arm is unique. So do you all have a certain number of companies? Like, do you have like a cohort, or is it kind of hand selecting one by one and giving this kind of like white glove experience per engagement?
Yeah, so we've iterated over the years in terms of how we provide that support. And the driver for us is, you know, from a business perspective, we wanted to make sure it was scalable on our side. But more importantly, we wanted to lower the barrier to entry for tech companies. So when Heavy came through the program, it was classes 4 times a year, 8-week intensive sort of stuff. And it was more expensive, quite frankly. It was probably 3 times more expensive than what it is now. No, more than that. 4 times. I can do math. It was 4 times more expensive than what it is now.
So just to expand on that, we don't talk specifics of the numbers, but yeah. you charge these companies a fee to get that advisory. Okay.
Exactly. And so what we're doing is, and that's why whenever people try to call us an accelerator, I would try to correct it, because when people hear accelerator, they think you're taking investment rights, you're taking equity in return, and you're early stage. And that's not what we're doing. So we are a fee-for-service model. We don't require equity or investment rights. When I was working with InQtel, you know, they require investment rights to work with them. And for a variety of reasons, companies at any given time might not be raising, or it might not be the right transaction for them. And so we would miss out on working with really great companies, and we didn't want to replicate that at Decode. So it's always been a fee-for-service model. And then it's not necessarily early stage. You know, the companies that we work with, like Heavy, have solid product market fit in the private sector, because what they're trying to do is expand into a different market. So we're experts on the market. We're not requiring companies to give up equity, and we're not requiring any sort of modifications to technology to be in order to work in the government. We're trying to take the companies where they are. So where the program, so the program was more intensive and a little bit more expensive previously. Where we are now, we really wanted to again, like, lower the hurdle to work with us. So we now have a boot camp that we run quarterly, because that just makes sense for staffing, for us to know it repetitively where it's going. But we run a boot camp that's about an hour or two per week. And it's 8 weeks long, and each week covers the fundamentals of the Fed market. So again, that marketing, pricing, use case mapping, budget, all the different contract vehicles. And then we have an online platform. So we're always sticky with these companies. If they ever need help, we're there. It's full of vendors as well. So if they need a proposal writer or compliance experts or anything like that you might need for the Fed network or for the Fed market, it's sort of at your fingertips. And then we have events twice per month, and companies can go to that in perpetuity. And those events are, you know, hour-long sessions with the Air Force or the Navy, where they come in and they talk about different opportunities that are great for companies. And so the price point for that is pretty inexpensive. And then it's, you know, as many seats as the company wants for one price. So we're trying to hit as many companies as we can. That model is ultimately more scalable for us, and honestly more beneficial for tech companies. If they're earlier stage, inexpensive cost to figure out, do I really want to go into the Fed market before I make some very expensive mistakes, hiring a lobbyist, hiring Fed salespeople before you need to. And if you're a growth stage company, you know, a CRO or VP of sales trying to figure out, why is my Fed sales team telling me what they're telling me? I don't quite understand the market. So that's really where we're trying to help the most companies we can.
I think one of the other things, so I've worked at two companies that got InQtel investment. And one of the things I saw was sort of this, like, it was great. It opened some doors. I'm not going to say that, like, it wasn't beneficial in some ways, but at the same time, some of the doors they opened was like us just trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, or around, you know, whatever it was like, great. We have this introduction. We have, like, there was just this pressure on us to do these things because of the InQtel relationship and how we got into the IC and other things. And I think it took us off mission. I think it sort of took us from, like, you know, we had this product, it has a commercial use, it has a government use, and it sort of bifurcated those things in some cases, because we were sort of being pushed by InQtel into areas that maybe weren't the best, you know, for our product or for where we wanted to take it. So I really like that fee for model, you know, that the model that you guys have. It's interesting.
So I understand too, though, you all partner with venture capital, right? So there's this strategic partnership that comes into play where if that's from a lead source, they're generating, deals and leads, or is there an actual, financial piece to what Decode Capital is doing that is helping with maybe, really earlier stage companies that could use a little bit of a check or something? Is that something that is cafeteria style, or it gets brought up on occasion, or it sounds like it wasn't applicable for heavy.ai, but I am just generally curious on how that partnership with the VCs work.
Yeah. Yeah. So we only launched the fund a couple of years ago. So companies that have been going through the program, again, would come in for fee for service. But ultimately what happened was a number of companies would ask us for investment because they wanted that federal expertise on their cap table as a board observer. They wanted that kind of help, and we didn't have any money. So we grew out an angel network, partnered with a couple of VCs to invest in a few companies that had been through the program. So we made 6 investments pre-fund before we decided to go ahead and launch a fund. And it got that exact problem, right? Like companies were coming through, they really wanted to give us equity, obviously in return for money. So we tested those waters and then ultimately decided to launch our own fund. So, we've been running as an advisory firm for about 8 years, and the fund is only the past 2 years. So now what we do is we are investing our own money now into companies that we have known through the advisory firm, or actually we recently invested in a company that has not gone through the firm, but is going through now. And so Heavy, we actually made an investment in, and we were super thrilled to do that. Love what they're doing. Love the team, obviously. That's why John and I are here. We've been friends for a while. And so now Decode, so companies go through Decode. They're in the pipeline for Decode Capital. It's not a given. It's not a requirement. It's not, we make a bet on ourselves that we'll be enough value add to the companies that they will want us to invest. And I'm always very upfront and honest with companies that if they're joining our bootcamp, a Decode Capital investment is not a given. We've invested in 10 companies over our lifespan, and 160 have gone through the program. So we're really using it as an opportunity to invest in great companies and continue to support them, particularly the ones like Heavy, where we're able to help them win government contracts. They've got solid product market fit in both sectors, and it made financial sense to us and to them to increase the partnership that way.
Very, very interesting. Very unique. I haven't heard much like it out there in the market. And John, I'd love to hear your two cents on this as well, as somebody that's kind of been a part of the program and worked closely with Decode Capital. And, after maybe graduating from the program, right? What did you see as a value add, going through it? And then like even post program, like what are you still seeing from it today?
It's interesting. So as I mentioned up front, I've been on board for about 2.5, I guess a little more than that now, it seems like it goes by fast. When I came in, I'd run other companies and such, and I'd had some federal experience and stuff. This was obviously, or this company had the deepest relationships in the IC community of any company. And so there was a lot more intricacies to working with that, because I don't have clearances, so I can only I get told what my team tells me and such. And so to Rebecca's point, sometimes you're like, so why are they telling me this? What are these things? And you learn a lot about three letter acronyms and, and such. But I think one of the things that was super refreshing from Decode, I got introduced as kind of my early introduction is joining the company to run the company. And Todd had done a great job running the company. They had gone through the program. Our head of federal at the time, spoke super highly of Decode and such and things. And candidly, we'd gotten a couple successful contracts, with the reference through Decode. So, and I think what's developed and I think what ultimately led to us, taking the investment and them investing in us was that building relationship. And I think that's, whether you want to call it an accelerator or you want to call it, and it's not an accelerator as the Cure definition, but one of those where you're going and learning, as a small technology company, the most valuable resource, obviously cash is super important, but it's time, right? And it's focus. We don't have a ton of time or resources to, spread thin. So you want to do that. So being able to have somebody that you can call, and, you know, I talk to Rebecca, her two partners all the time, and, you know, about, hey, what do you guys think about this? Or this is what happened. You know, we got, you know, quite candidly, we got kicked in the shins a little bit this year with a surprise. They were great, right? They were great on, hey, here's how we should think about it. Here's what we're going to do, and things along those lines. So they're a great sounding board because you're talking to people who understand the space. You know, I can talk to, I have a great, strong board of directors, big institutional VCs and such, and they're great. But when it comes to federal stuff, you know, Rebecca and team are who I call. We just, you know, had a transition in our federal leadership. They were part of the interview team and a big part of that. So I think it's, you know, one of the things that I would say to any of the companies that have either are going through or have gone through is leverage that network, leverage the network that Decode brings to you and stuff like that. You have to invest in it, right? I mean, I think that it's something, but the federal piece is an important part of our business. We're excited about what the prospects are. We're finally getting to some, on a couple programs, some really strong maturity where, you know, we're going to move to program a record on a couple things and such. And when you do that, you really get instantiated. You know, having the help of going, okay, so what they're asking us to do this, they're asking us to do this, and there's this term, and what's it mean, and all those things, and having that help is super important.
Yeah, I think
it's kind of funny to talk to every now and then. So, you know,
that's really what you're paying the fee for, really, is a little comic relief when you get kicked in the shins. I mean, a lot of companies got kicked in the shins this year. And, you know, when you think about, I love the point you make about time, because the amount of time it takes to tap into a market like the Fed space, if you're not familiar with it, you know, it's very important to have some realistic expectations of what it's going to take to start to seize.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but I think the other thing too is if you apply a commercial mindset to the federal space, you will wind up driving yourself crazy. Because you're like, look, they used our stuff. They accomplished a really important mission critical thing. They can't not use this. Why aren't they buying it? Right. I mean, it's like you guys cured cancer with our stuff, but yet, oh, you didn't pass, you know, this score on this thing. And so it can really, like, it can drive you nuts. And to have somebody that's like, calm, mm-hmm. This is normal. You're not the only person that this has happened to. This is, you know, here's what you got to do. Yes. The fact that you have that strong mission case will help you get through all of that stuff, but doing that, but having, you know, and I think those, especially that have started in commercial, going to federal, I can't tell you how valuable that is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's well said. And, you know, one of the things that's fascinating or interesting about the program, Rebecca, is like the events, because for folks that maybe aren't familiar with how a lot of business is done in defense or areas of, you know, DOD is, you know, these events are very important to meet folks in person, shake hands. Like, this is, you know, sometimes a little bit of an old school style of how business is done, and it can be very different from commercial. So the fact that you all are facilitating this meet and greet scenario where it's like, hey, here's folks from Navy, here's folks from the Army, I think it's really a really smart move. But I am curious too, because, you know, we also deal a lot with recruiting as a part of our business, and it seems like an organic almost add-on for you all as a way to, you know, help with the break into the federal space for folks that maybe don't have that federal person intact just yet. Have you ever helped in other areas of like operations of FIPI, like, you know, staffing, recruiting, you know, injecting, you know, actual like human capital to help them break in, because, you know, this person is well plugged into XYZ agencies?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things that I, you know, one of the reasons that I decided to jump from the government to work for Decode is because of the mission that was still there. Like, that was still very important to me to fix the government, to make sure, you know, I still had a focus on national security. And one of the best ways to get the government to use something is to introduce them to other people in the government who are using it. So it's a much better sale if you can get two different agencies to talk to each other about how they're using a particular product. And this is one of the ways that we were able to get Heavy some additional contracts across the government, because they had so many champions in other agencies that were willing to say, oh my gosh, this tool is amazing. It is helping us do stuff we would not be able to do otherwise. And so from a human capital perspective, what we've been able to do is leverage the relationships that you're talking about across the DOD, so across the Navy to the Air Force, and then over, you know, to DHS to say, hey, this is how this group is using Heavy. Here's how you could be using it too. Let's connect you guys and then bring Heavy in after that. So we do that. We also, you know, as John mentioned, we helped him with his interview process for his Fed salesperson. We see a lot of Fed salespeople. There's a lot of good ones. There's a lot of bad ones. And so there's definitely certain things that you look for and certain answers you look for. And then, you know, we had this did not happen to Heavy. This is a horror story from another company, but we invested in the company, but after they went through this, so they were going after a contract with the Air Force, and the Air Force has certain rules around ownership in order to qualify for certain contracts. So what percentage of your company is owned by VCs? And the company closed on an investment round 2 days before they were going to be awarded millions of dollars from the Air Force that they were now no longer able to get, because the ownership structure of the company changed 2 days before they were going to sign this Air Force contract. And, you know, the Fed sales guys, you know, that's a lot of money for him that he was going to get in variable comp that he just lost. And so, you know, he was, can you please talk to my C-suite, help them to understand this, talk to the board. You know, there are significant effects on revenue and how you go after the Fed market with decisions that you're making solely in the private sector. When you're thinking about your private sector business. So we try to help with those things as well. You know, if you make a decision to move to a purely SaaS product, this is what will happen to your gov contracts. You know, there's all sorts of things that companies don't think about because they haven't had to with what happens in the Fed space.
I'm curious about, like, from an acceptance rate of, you know, you all, you know, wanting to, you know, to collaborate or partner with a company that's, you know, looking to go through the DECODE capital program, is do you turn away a lot of companies? I mean, that think they have this dual use scenario, but, you know, you're going to save them a lot of time by not going down that path? Or, you know, I'd imagine, like, a little bit differently. Like, it's a, you know, paid for service, you know, so I'm just curious to know, like, how much work you're trying to turn away, and the truth of, like, this is really not going to be a good path for you.
Yeah. And this honestly gets to how we iterated the business. So when Heavy went through the program, it was a competitive application process. So we selected Heavy because they were so amazing at what they do. Where we are now, with the boot camp that we have, what we're trying to hit is as many companies as we possibly can. So we're not and one of the use cases that we want companies to have when they come to us is, do I want to get into the Fed market at all? So I'll talk numbers because it's relevant for this conversation, but the price for our boot camp is $9,500. So that's a very inexpensive way for companies to figure out, I'm thinking about the Fed market. Do I really want to go into it? Should I hire, you know, somebody who recently left the government and retired and is claiming to have a good Rolodex? Short answer is no, do not do that. You know, what do I do? And so we want them, come to us. As long as you're a product company, we don't do services. As long as you're a product company, come to us, take the boot camp. It's inexpensive. And then you can make an informed decision on what you do next and who you hire next.
That's awesome.
That's great. Yeah, that $9,500 is a drop in the bucket compared to what you'd be spending on your opportunity cost of figuring it all out.
Like, or the wrong person. This person has a good Rolodex. That's a very common, terrible mistake.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Or hiring a lobbyist immediately. Like that's not how you get, that's not how you make sales.
But. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. I appreciate the, you know, just kind of like that guiding light mentality, because, you know, a lot of folks would just, you know, take the money to take the money. Right. You're truly trying to make sure it's a good fit. And for that reason, it's, you know, it's priced the way it is, but it's also, you know, it's not forced on them. It's not, you know, opt-in kind of course. Yeah, that's great. I guess just kind of putting a bow on the conversation before we transition to our final segment. Any closing remarks or advice that you have for those companies out there, Rebecca, that are looking to maybe make that leap in? You know, some things that those leadership teams might want to ask themselves to see if it makes sense or to consider, you know, a program like Decode Capitals?
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you want to go directly into the government space and that's going to be your prime customer, then you make that decision. If you want to be a dual use company, build your company in the private sector first. Build it, get the money, get good customers, build it there. And then if you can do something creative and lightweight in the government, which is going to be rare, there's a couple of programs inside DoD where you can, but make sure it's in line with what you want to do in the private sector. But we tend to tell companies, if you're launching a company, if you're early stage, figure it out in the private sector first, because you're more likely to survive than if you go after a Fed contract too early in your lifespan. That's what I'd recommend.
Very nice. And then, John, I guess, you know, without getting too specific, but any exciting, avenues that you all are channeling going into defense or national security in 2024 that you want to share?
Yeah, we're excited about, the prospects. We've had a couple, I think, Mike, you were talking about all the new satellites and things that are being launched. There is just tons of new sensors that are being deployed. And, we're a part of some of those programs, and the response we're getting is overwhelmingly positive. The fact that, they've been able to, one of our largest competitors, they were able to put a day's worth of data in, and another one they could put a week's in. And in ours, they can analyze over a year, right, in faster time, right? So the fact that we're able to help do that, it's good. It's delivering on the mission. And, I think one of the things, too, that I would say, a couple things as I think about the Fed space, to kind of tag on, Rebecca, is, number one, you got to believe in the mission, by the way, because you need people who actually believe in the mission of what is trying to be done. The other thing is, you got to be patient. Because it's one of those things, and I wouldn't build a business plan built on, okay, we're going to get this deal by this time, by these kinds of things. You have to look at it and say, yes, we will. We'll make an incremental. And by the way, you're going to get early indications. You'll get put onto a research contract. You go, we've made it. Still got to find a home. So there's a lot of things that need to happen, but it can be a really fulfilling, fulfilling piece of business. And, I think it's, dual use is the right way to go. But to Rebecca's point, go build your private stuff first, your commercial stuff first, and then go do that.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's an area that we are seeing more and more of. It's a smart, if there's a play there, it's very smart to diversify. In today's market, it's extremely tough to raise capital right now. And call it what it is, in times like this, when there's instability, people lean into stable verticals. Maybe, it doesn't always seem like it from the outside in, but the government's got a lot of money to spend.
It does. When they spend.
And there's a clear call to a need to revamp our defense. And, in today's time when war is sadly prevalent. So, certainly a need for, the heavy.ai use case and certainly a need for what you all are doing at Decode Capital. So kudos to both you all. And let's kind of wrap it up with some rapid fire Q&A. So we're going to switch to our last segment here called the 5 second scramble. This is, try to keep your answers within 5 seconds. If you don't, you're not going to get the air horn boot. Some business, some personal, we're not getting too personal here. I'm going to start with, you, Rebecca, and then I'll jump to John. So are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. What would you say is unique about the culture at Decode Capital?
There's a significant focus on having fun. If you check out our website, everybody had to put up GIFs underneath their photos, and it's actually hilarious how well it matches up with people's personality. It's amazing. I was actually looking at it last night because all the new people join and they have to pick one, and it's really great.
That's so good. I mean, GIFs is a can't lose scenario. Everybody's got something.
I was a little worried. Is it GIF? Is it GIF? I don't know what you guys.
I go GIF.
All right.
But yeah. I know what the owner or the inventor wants, but I don't care.
John, you need to settle this. GIF, GIF.
I go GIF, but that's, I don't know. I say it with the same trepidation that Rebecca has. It's like, I'm not sure.
All right, moving on. So what can folks be most excited about with Decode Capital heading into 2024?
more investments. We're excited. You know, we've raised more money and we are excited to be deploying it into great companies. And then I personally am very excited to continue helping Heavy out with some of the work that they're doing in the IC. It is beyond cool and super rewarding.
Morning routine. So what's the first thing that you do when you wake up?
Are we still on me or is we, when do we go to John?
After you've got 10 questions. So you're on your third.
Right. First thing I do, after like going to the bathroom, I walk the dog.
Yeah. Aside from your phone, what's one tech gadget that you can't live without?
Honestly, that's it. So my husband kept trying to get me to wear the Apple Watch and I cannot do all the notifications. I just can't deal with it. I don't watch a ton of TV. I would like to throw my laptop out the window most of the time. So I'm not a big, I know I'm in VC and I should say I'm a big tech person, but yeah.
Hey, I love that answer. That's the same way I'm anti Apple Watch as well. Just get me away from the notifications. Don't boost them. Really? You rather work from home or in the office?
Just had a conversation about this in the office, but in the office as office culture was pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Post-COVID office culture is tough because nobody's actually there. People are in and out, but I loved, because at the CIA, you have to be in the office, right? Mm-hmm. There's no option. Otherwise, you get arrested. So if you're looking at classified information outside the office, you have a large problem on your hands. So love in office culture pre-COVID.
Yeah, that's a good answer. What is a charity or corporate philanthropy that's near and dear to you?
My in-laws helped found Puppies Behind Bars, a very cool organization where they use inmates to train dogs that then become seeing eye dogs or bomb sniffing dogs. And actually, when I was in Afghanistan, one of the dogs that they trained was actually at the gates sniffing for bombs. So it was a cool, very full circle kind of moment.
Very neat. What is your go-to dessert?
Anything chocolate. Anything that's not chocolate is not dessert.
Do you have a favorite quick stress relief activity?
Going for a walk so that whatever I'm about to write doesn't actually get sent.
Mixed with the mezcal margarita afterwards.
No, not margarita. Old fashioned.
Old fashioned. If you could time travel, which period would you want to visit first?
Can I go to the future?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I would go. I would go to wherever Star Trek The Next Generation took place.
Oh, very nice. And then last question, what's one thing that's on your bucket list?
Oh, I try not to think like that because otherwise, why am I not doing it now?
Well played. Well, you just flipped that question on its head. Awesome. All right. You are all through. John, you're up. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. Explain heavy.ai to me as if I were a 5-year-old.
If you want to find a needle in a haystack, and the haystack is an immense assortment of pay or geospatial data, customer data, all those kinds of things, we help you find it.
What's your favorite part about the culture at heavy.ai?
It is an amazing amount. Everyone that's here has an amazing amount of grit. And I think the other thing that's kind of cool is they're all a bunch of geospatial just freaks.
We kind of touched on this earlier, but what can folks be most excited about for heavy.ai going into 2024?
I think the product continues to evolve. And I think more importantly, the product and us understanding where it fits in the world, both in the commercial sector and in the public sector, is really coming into focus. And I think what I look at next year is our ability to then really go expose that fit and have people see it. You know, I think our issue has been, it took a while for people to see it, have that oh my moment. We call it something else internally, but the oh what moment, you know. And now we want to be able to have that to be a much broader set of people see that.
Yeah, I mean, this is an R-rated show. You can say oh shit if you want to, but we'll take oh my. We'll take the oh my moment. Yes or no to pineapple on pizza?
No.
Well, Rebecca disagrees. What's the last video movie series that you binge watched?
So I just totally unexpected, but all I had was my phone and all I had on it was Apple TV. So I, and all that was available was Slow Horses. I don't, it's kind of this, and I watched the first season, and of course our flight from, as it always is, from Dallas to San Francisco, boarded on time, going to get in early, ended up being an hour and a half late. So of course I watched the whole thing. Right. So
classic. What's a charity or a corporate philanthropy that's near and dear to you?
So, one, it's a local one, and you know, sadly, I had an ex-founder. He just recently passed away, but he was retired. One of the things he did in his pastime was the CASA program, which was, I think, court-appointed special advisor. What it does is it works with troubled youth, and he did this, and the success he had with his guys that he worked with was amazing. I mean, these guys were, you know, coming out of tough home situations, gang situations, to the point now that, you know, they're being productive members of society. And so it's one of the things that, and sadly, he just passed in the last couple months unexpectedly. And so, you know, it's one of those things that I'll, was just actually thinking today that I need to send my support for that.
Cool. Yeah, good way to honor him. Yeah, we'll add both of those philanthropies into the show notes as well. So both sound very, very neat. If you could have dinner with any tech icon, past or present, who would it be with?
That's a tough one. I would probably say Steve Jobs, because I think it would be one of the most interesting, just to see that mind at work. I don't know that it'd be the most pleasant dinner, but I think it'd be, I think it'd be a riveting dinner.
Yeah. Good answer. What's your favorite productivity hack?
I think it is blocking out work time, right? It's just, you know, I will purposely put blocks on my calendar that I know I'm going to just, I can put on, if it's during the day, may not have a glass of bourbon, but if it's night, have some bourbon, but also always has the music with it, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. All right. One of my favorite questions. What is the worst fashion trend that you've ever followed?
So this will date myself, but you know, in high school, there's pictures of me probably wearing a velour shirt.
Nice.
We got to get pictures of these. I honestly, Rebecca, what's yours? Everybody's got a good answer for this. I mean, there's usually something that really.
I mean, nothing is immediately coming to mind, not because I don't have it. But
you can submit a picture.
I grew up in a very strict household, so there I was not allowed to do the trends. And then by the time I got to college, I don't know, maybe those terrible like platform shoes, the platform slides, you know, the Rocket Dogs.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Rocket Dogs, yeah. I'm just maybe. Still picturing John in a velour shirt. It's really, yeah, I mean, it's really, way really way distracting. Right, we're going to have to get a picture of this, John.
Remember, I do have an investor on the phone, so I gotta, you know.
Yeah, this immediately gets shut down by your PR team once the picture gets released. All right, last one. What was your dream job as a kid?
I think I probably wanted to be an astronaut. My dad and I shared, you know, he was a aerospace engineer his whole career, and so space was, you know, and I kind of grew up during the moonshot era and stuff, right? And so that was one of the things that we all shared together. And so I think that was, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, had you asked me then.
Mm-hmm. Probably plays into why you're so passionate about, you know, working with a bunch of folks, you know, tackling geospatial challenges right now too.
Yeah, so. You know, it's funny because I always, you know, not to get into a long philosophical, but you know, career wise, you know, I wish I could say that every one of my moves has been planned for the next and for where I ended up today. But I think if you look at the collection of experiences that kind of led to that, but I do think, you know, not to get too gushy, but you know, growing up in a house where my dad was in defense, you know, he was in the defense industry. That's what I was raised in and such. And I think it got me, it's why I'm passionate and really pleased that we have this federal practice, because it is, there is an important part of, you know, what we do as a private industry to help our country with national defense. And, you know, I don't want to get into politics and people can argue that, but whether we like it or not, we need it. And, you know, so I'm proud of that. And I think that probably was instilled in some of my values growing up.
Cool. Yeah, it's scratching that itch for you. And we're all about gushy on this show, so don't worry about, you know, showing your emotions. We enjoy that. All right, that's a wrap. Y'all nailed it. And, you know, that's all we got. So I just want to thank you again both for spending time with us and shedding light on, you know, how this relationship works. I think it's one unique use case, and love the work that Decode Capital is doing. I think it's something that's super needed, just kind of knowing all the intricacies of tapping into the space here. So appreciate that, and appreciate you all. And thanks for spending time with us on the pod.
Thanks.
Thanks.